Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome to an hour of Mind Power. We are trying to reach our surprise guest, Susan Phelps, and we're waiting for her call. So as soon as she gets with us, we'll be bringing her on the air. We're going to be talking about, when we're able to reach her, how you can aspire higher. And related to that, I wanted to share a thought with you by Lee Hunt. And, oh, by the way, you can give me a call at 888-627-6008 if you like. This is what Lee said. The mind may undoubtedly affect the body, but the body also affects the mind. There is a reaction between them, and by lessening it on either side, you diminish the pain on both. I think that that is something that we always need to remember. The mind-body-spirit connection is in play at all times. And if ever you've had something just totally deplete you emotionally, you will find that that is something that affects you physically. Well, we've got our guest, Susan Phelps. Susan, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Donna. It's absolutely my pleasure and delight to be with you and your audience today.
Well, when I got your book, I was so pleased that you took a positioning. Your book is called Aspire Higher. And we hear so much about this. We hear about, gee, we've got to set goals. We've got to do this. We've got to do that. We've got to do the other. But, Susan, you've taken a different positioning here. You're coming from the position of empowering other people by being a mentor. Now, this is what you do. This is something, you have your own business, Odyssey Mentoring and Leadership, and you work with different organizations. One of the things that you have a concern about is the brain drain. And every time I hear that, I just sort of stop. It's not mentioned very often, but we have this phenomenal generation that has so much knowledge, so much wisdom. They're in their 60s, their 70s, their 80s, and they have not been encouraged to continue to stay involved. In fact, they were indoctrinated to just sort of step out of life when they hit 65, and they are these repositories, not just of history, but of wisdom, experience, all kinds of things that the younger generation is in desperate need of. They need the mentoring. What got you turned on to this? I mean, you obviously are doing this yourself, but what made you recognize the brain drain?
Oh, my. Well, believe it or not, I went back to school in my 50s to get a master's degree. And I was casting about, what am I going to do for a thesis? And it suddenly occurred to me, you know, I've been doing mentoring with youth all this time, let's take a look at corporate mentoring programs. And this was in 2007, before people were talking about the Great Recession. Mm-hmm. And what I started to read about was that the boomer generation was going to start retiring in record numbers, literally 10,000 people per day.
Ooh.
And the Generation X behind us was only half the size of our generation.
Amazing.
So you start to look at what's going to happen in the workforce when more than 40% of the workforce are made up of boomers and more than 80% of corporate leadership is made up of boomers, mostly men. What's going to happen as these people retire, die, or become too disabled to work? Mm-hmm. And they were starting to talk about it as this huge economic crisis. And then, kaboom, the recession hit. And everything that they were talking about got put on a back burner, literally because people at every age were getting laid off. Companies were, you know, battening down the hatches. And, oh, my goodness, people were really out of work. And people who were in their 50s and 60s who had gotten laid off weren't now worried about retiring. They were worried about, let me get back to work.
Mm-hmm.
Now that the recession is starting to ease off, weirdly, many companies are not rehiring. And yet, a good chunk of their workforce are Gen X, Gen Y, and they're now working in very flat organizations where there are less leadership opportunities than at any time in history. And most of those leadership opportunities are held by boomers who are now pressed to work a little bit longer, but at some point, many of them won't be able to do that. Something's
right.
going to change in their ability to do that kind of work. And these people at Gen X period, at this Gen X period of their life, men, women, minorities are going to have an unprecedented opportunity to advance in a way that the normal progression has not allowed them to do. But they're not going to be ready unless they have a mentor helping them take those developmental steps and have that growth that mentoring provides that they will not get enough experience to provide. And
this
we're going to see companies who prepare for this by actually providing mentorship opportunities in their organizations, they'll be ready. The other ones are going to be poaching the leaders from all the other companies, and there won't be enough people.
I don't know if you can hear me, but I'd just like to stop you there for a minute because you brought out some extremely powerful points. You brought out a number of them. One of them is when you have a business, you have an organization, there needs to be a preparation for the business to go on. There are so many individuals, when they're in the positioning of leadership, they don't know how to do that. They become very jealous about their positioning. A good leader is going to be one that says, I want my team to be prepared. When you look at the example, there's two examples that come into my mind very significantly. One, interestingly enough, is West Point. West Point, as a school, was totally oriented, and I'm going to make this very simple. It's a lot more complicated than what I'm saying. But they went through a cycle where they refused to move forward. Those that were in the position of authority had attitudes, and they were stuck in ruts. They would not change them. They had certain agendas. That was it. There you go. And when you go through their history, and this is just very short, it is amazing how they were literally forced. They almost ended up being closed down more than once because they didn't have really, they were training leaders, but those at the top really were not necessarily of the leadership mentality to move forward. They've got stuck in their own paradigm. You have the situation with Apple where Steve Jobs, who is an incredibly innovative person, and he had this team around them. He'd throw out ideas. He passed away at a very young age. Someone to fill his shoes, it may take 10 people to fill his shoes because he was one of those rare individuals that had this phenomenal concept of growth, development, adaptability, resilience, all of these things. Regrettably, there's a big adjustment that's going on in that company because it takes a grouping of personalities to do what one man was able to do. And what you're talking about with the mentoring, if someone is wise, you will look for those people to be better than you actually. And that is what your book is about. And you were so influenced by people when you're growing up. We all are. But in today's world, someone out there, I don't care what their age is, you want someone that you can mentor with, but you wonder, who do I go to? Who am I going to talk to? Who is going to be the best person for me to do this with? let's address that, because I'm, you know, talk is something we can talk about, but people say, what do I do? I don't know who to ask. What's the first step you'd recommend?
It depends on where you're currently working. If you're in a very large organization, for example, you can actually look within your organization two or three levels above where you are, or possibly even one level, depending upon how the organization is structured. And some of it is really just normal networking in terms of looking for that person who might be open to becoming your mentor. And that would be in an organization that may not have a formal program, but even if it does, you don't always get the opportunity to choose the person who's right for you. And I often say to my clients and to when they bring me in for even just leadership training and they're not even talking about mentoring, I'm going to tell them, you want to find someone in this organization who's above you that would be willing to meet with you on a regular basis and be your mentor. And then once that person has agreed to be your mentor, you just use my book and those seven principles and put that into your relationship. And it's really the mentee who drives that relationship, makes sure that the meetings happen, confirms, gets back to the person, and manages all of that. The mentor is really someone that you're accessing so that you can brainstorm ideas, brainstorm your goals, brainstorm how you're staying focused on those goals, and walk away from each meeting with a minimum of three action steps that you will take as a result of that meeting. Now, if you're in an organization where there just isn't anyone above you that would be open to mentoring, or there's just not enough depth in the company, that's where your professional association can make all the difference. If you don't belong to one, find one that's in your area and start meeting those people. And once you find someone who has basically the career you want, that's the person you want to meet, get to know, and see if you can't establish a mentoring relationship with them.
You bring out some very good points in your book, and you say, talented people, and it's right in your introduction, talented people with lofty goals and plenty of desire are the very people who make the most of mentoring from either side of the partnership. If you want to be a mentor, if you really want to be able to pass along your wisdom and knowledge, I don't care if you're an electrician, if you are someone that is the CEO of a Fortune 500 company and everything and anything in between, this is very important to realize that there are those individuals that will love to learn from you. They want to know from you what it is that you feel they will be empowered with. I think one of the most famous stories is Napoleon Hill, who was inspired as a mentor to work with Carnegie. And Carnegie was the one that said, I want you to do X, Y, Z, literally gave him an assignment. And that assignment took him 20 years, but it just created the law of success or the laws of success. And then from that, think and grow rich, and the rest is history. And he said it was tough at times because it meant that he had to do the work. He was the mentee. But what he learned from it was phenomenal, and after that, his career was established. One of the steps is powerful listening. Now, give us aside from the mentor and then the mentee when it comes to powerful listening.
That's such a great question, Donna. I'm going to start with the mentee. You know, when you are there to learn, it's very easy to listen to what someone says from the standpoint of, oh, I've heard that before. Oh, I know that. Oh, yes, I know that. Oh, my mother's told me that for years. Oh, I don't like that. I'm not interested in that. I want to go in the other direction. But if you are with your mentor and you are listening as if every word they had to say to you was gold and could be a possibility and an opportunity for you to grow and expand and succeed and cause breakthroughs in performance, who you're being in that conversation is a budding opportunity, possibility, and person waiting to spring into action. If you look at my book, The Story About Craig Kinley, this guy did what his mentor said, but then everything he did, he kept going to school, he kept learning, he kept growing his career, he kept adding excellence upon excellence until he literally worked himself all the way up through Sprint to now he owns 3 companies. This is a guy who listened as if everything was going to make a difference in his life. And guess what? It did.
Mm-hmm.
When you're the mentor, you're listening for patterns of success, patterns of failure. You're listening for commitment. You're listening for the talent that you can work with and develop. You know, if I'm your mentor, Donna, and I'm listening to you like, oh, this poor Donna, if she really wants to succeed, she's going to have to do this or that. I don't know if she's up to it. I can't be listening to the great gifts that you have that are there to be developed. But if I'm listening to you as Donna is this amazing, talented, intelligent woman with huge possibilities, and what I see is she's doing this and this, and she could do this and make it even grander and better and more effective, wow. The coaching that I'm going to be able to give to you, the advice that I'm going to be able to give to you, the things that I'm going to be able to point out to you to observe so that you can begin to see your own patterns will be on such a much higher level than if I think you're this poor woman who needs my help.
I really like what you've said there, because there have been so, and I have encountered this in my life. I was very fortunate to have a mentor when I was younger who was just right on the ball, and she would just drop a little seed here and a little seed there, and then she'd say, go and take it and run with it. I want you to show me what you can do. And so I had to demonstrate discipline. I had to demonstrate follow-through, and it worked. Now, what has occurred with many times other people that I had thought would be good mentors is that sometimes those mentors were caught in their own quagmire of confusion. And then I ended up extremely disappointed because I thought, this is something I'm wanting to learn from them. Why are they not doing, you know, what is it that made me make a wrong choice? And I'm sure I'm saying this because I know that there are people listening saying, oh, I had a mentor and they would sit and talk to me all the time about their problems. They would just,
right.
I'm going, oh my goodness. Or I paid a huge amount of money for someone to mentor me because quote unquote, they were successful. And all I got was a bunch of words and I would follow maybe what they said, but I'm not who they are. I'm a different individual. So how do you address that? Because that happens to people.
Actually what you're describing is sort of the classical, the way it always used to be. It not only happens to people, some of the mentors do it intentionally because they are looking. Howard Gardner, who really worked with he's a Harvard School of Education professor. He's the chair of their Graduate School of Education. He said they were looking for a mini-me. So they would go, oh, Donna reminds me of myself. What was her age? I'm going to turn her into the next me. But for the most part, that was men cultivating another man and choosing who they were going to mentor so that they could literally replace themselves in the scheme of things.
Mm-hmm.
And with women in the workforce, people of color in the workforce, they have often been shut out of those protege-type mentoring relationships because you don't look like the guy in the corner office to mentor you, so he can't even see that you're the quality of person who wants to be mentored. So that's one thing. And it's been a huge barrier. It's been one of the things that keeps the floor sticky or the glass ceiling solid. Whichever way you want to look at it, they're not seeing the future leader because the future leader doesn't look like them. So that's one piece. The other piece is you have people who simply don't know how to listen deeply, be keen observers, and teach rather than share my war stories with you. You know, mm-hmm. worst thing, especially as you get older, it's like, well, you know, when I started in this business, we didn't even have fax machines. That is not useful for anyone in this day and age with this level of technology. So mentors have to understand this is not about war stories. This is really about listening for who this person is, what they have to offer, and how you can help them develop in their path. They're never going to succeed if they're going to become a mini you or mini me. They're going to succeed because we develop the talent and the gifts that they have. And that's really why I'm able to make a living, because people don't know how to do the mentor role naturally. And what I like to do is when a company calls me in to train, I work with both the mentors and the mentees, because mentoring is a partnership. It's two people working together to develop one person. But the benefits for the mentor are that you get reignited with your passion for what you're doing. And mentors actually rise higher and faster than their colleagues who don't mentor. Mentees leap hurdles of the learning curve much more quickly because they're being mentored. But that only happens in an effective relationship. And that's what I try to do with my seven principles, is teach you how to do that, how to lay foundation and have a relationship that's mutually beneficial and extraordinarily powerful for both parties.
There is a question that it's brought up, and one of the skills of being a good mentor, you said, is knowing how to ask the right questions of the person that's in front of you. And your point about accepting a mentee's individual expression is very important. Discipline goes with any level of success. It's a very important aspect. But sometimes we need to be, if we're going to be mentors, aware that someone may think or process things differently. So emphasizing their strengths is always good. But knowing how to present a question to someone is really a skill that has to be learned. And I really liked your story about Bibby. And Bibby met in 2009 a man by the name of George Beardsley. And she would meet with him on a regular basis. And the aspect of mentoring is typically most rewarding when the mentor really wants that person to succeed, when there's no petty jealousy, when there's no gee whiz, I'm better than you attitude. When you look at that human being that's coming to you for your understanding, skill, and wisdom, when you are looking at them and you have integrity with them and you share the best of what you've got, one of the biggest satisfactions is seeing that person surpassing what you even imagined for them. Because the mentee is going to have to do the work. But the greatest satisfaction is seeing that person just soar. That is something that there is no amount of money that can ever satisfy. It is that feeling that you know that you have been able to help that person get past whatever it was that was blocking them, and they're moving forward.
Yeah, that is such, and I love that story. I mean, here was a woman who was successful by every measure. Her company was grossing $1 million a year. It took her 11 years to get there, and when she began to work with George, literally within a year, She was able to grow her company into a $2 million a year concern and have personal time so that she could take a real vacation for the first time in 12 years.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it came about because of George. Now, how did she meet George? How did this connection happen?
Yeah, she went to a workshop on, you know, growing your business. She was a woman business owner, and in San Francisco, where her business was based, there was, you know, like the Small Business Association and different organizations have all kinds of workshops and classes. And she went and took one, and George was the instructor. And basically, he was really teaching them how to manage time. She walked away with a list of things to do, did every one of them, and went back for a follow-up session. And she was the only person who had been in the workshop who literally did every single thing he said to do. And just doing what he had recommended had changed her life, had made her more effective in her business. So at the end of the class, he was so appreciative that she had done everything. When she said to him, "Would you be my mentor?" he said yes. And he didn't charge her money for that. He just took her on. They worked together for a year, produced extraordinary results, and at the end of that year, she hired him to then mentor someone else in her company so that she could be the keen observer and learn how to do mentoring herself so she could then create a mentoring culture in her company.
Well, I think, Susan Phelps, you have done something extraordinary with this book. Aspire Higher. It is what you'd call a slim book. It is exactly that. It's the type of book that you could tuck in your briefcase or you could just sit down with a cup of tea and go through. And as I do with books that I review, I encourage you to do the same, and that is have a highlighter. I like yellow. Use whatever color you like. But make notes. Write in the book. Use the book as a textbook, if you will. It's not real thick. It's something that will allow you to think about what it is if you are a person that's looking for help, where you possibly could go so that you could be able to do something for yourself. On the other side, if you are a mature individual and you want your legacy of wisdom and understanding to pass on, who can you mentor? Who can you inspire? What can you do to have this world be a richer environment? There's two sides to a coin, always. Those two sides make a solidarity that is invaluable on so many different levels. Susan Phelps, what's your website that people can go to?
It's www.odysseymentoring.com. And you can actually buy the book right on site, or you can get it at any bookstore. If they're out of it, just make them order some more.
All right. Repeat that for me again, please, Odysee.
I will. It's www.odysseymentoring.com.
There you've got it. Why not check it out? Find out what's going
on. Thank you so much, Donna. Oh, my gosh. I'm so thankful that my book touched you the way that it has. There is no greater honor that you can pay to an author than that, and I thank you.
It's my pleasure, Susan. It was a delight. Thank you for being a guest on my show. This is Donna Sebo. Check out odysseymentoring.com. We're taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment. Don't go away.
Do you have children between the ages of 3 to 10? Do you love children's books and collect them? Then you'll want to know about God's Kiss, the award-winning illustrated children's book that has been enjoyed by families around the world. 15 beautiful illustrations by Pacific Northwest artist Ed Gedros accompany this lovely story about a little boy named Johnny. They will capture your heart and mind in a very special way. Multicultural and non-denominational in content, it will become a family favorite that you and your children will want to read again and again. This book is available by itself through Amazon, or if you contact me, Donna Sebo, directly, you can get a personalized signed copy. There is also a talking book. You can order the talking book CD by contacting me via email, donna@delphiinternational.com, or by calling 253-582-8255. 5604. You can also visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, to see more details. God's Kiss is a family classic that belongs in everyone's library. Get your copy now.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo. Welcome back. And we have a second guest today. We are traveling via the wonders of technology up to the Aleutian Islands in Alaska. Those cold, forbidding environments. Well, maybe not as forbidding as you think, but it is a tough area to be in. And my guest, Cora Holmes, is a woman who has lived there for a number of years. And what she has done is she has taken various legends that in her many years of living up in the Aleutian Islands, she's been able to weave into novels. And the one we're going to be talking about today is Outside Man. Cora Holmes, welcome to the show.
Good morning, Donna.
Hi. My goodness. How is it up there in the Aleutians? Are you seeing any signs of spring yet?
Yes, actually we are. It is the light. It always makes such a difference to have the daylight come back.
Oh, yes.
Just can't imagine. Yes, the sky is starting to lighten already, and that is so much fun to have light after such a long gray winter.
Now, you are a woman that has not just a wonderful way of writing. The book Outside Man is just an amazing story. In fact, was this your first novel, Cora?
Yes, it is.
The cover on it is just amazing. It shows the waters of Alaska. It shows a partial face of a totem, which are very significant items in the Alaskan Native culture. And then it shows rocks and water forming. And, of course, the Aleutians being islands, they are surrounded with water. This legend that you wrote, about in this book, tell us how you first learned of it.
Well, the Outside Man is probably a universal legend, I imagine. But here, the Outside Man is an outlaw, generally a banished person. In this environment, community was so important, and that was the worst thing that could happen to anybody, any crime, and you would be banished from the village. And without people around you, without a place to live, at a community of food provisions, being an outside man was a death sentence.
Mm-hmm.
And every child in Alaska or in the Aleutians has probably heard at one time or another, you don't go near the cliffs, the outside man will get you. Don't stay out after dark, the outside man will get you. So through the years, he's sort of become a boogeyman.
Mm-hmm. It's amazing how stories evolve and how legends evolve. And regardless of what culture you go to, there are always those components where you'll say, just like I can remember, the boogeyman can get you. When I was a little girl, that was often a term. And I don't recall who I heard say it. But I remember going to bed at night, you had to behave yourself, otherwise the boogeyman was going to get you. Now, I don't know what the boogeyman was, but, you know, there it is. And this is something, again, in every culture we have it, but the outside man, like you said, it is sort of a universal theme, but it's adapted to whatever is there. And, of course, up in the Aleutians, this environment is a very rugged environment. It's beautiful country, but anyone that I've known of that was in World War II, whenever I've talked with them and they served up there, they said it was a harsh, harsh place to be. So the people that were there, their survival depended on the community. The community enabled you to survive. It enabled the children to have teachers. They are really the epitome of how the saying, it takes a village to teach a child. They really did that.
in the Aleutians, didn't they?
They certainly did, yes. Actually, every child in the village would have more than one parent. They would have their birth parents, and they would have a protector, someone who always took their side, whether that was somebody from their family or an elder in the village. Yes, children were well cared for in that respect. Children were important.
With this story, Outside Man, this is a love story. And this is about an individual called Raven Wing. And Raven Wing is banished. Now, this was done a long time ago, but the history orally was passed down, as your story portrays it. And the Aleut chief said, "You're banished." And he was innocent, but he was banished. He was dead as far as all of the people of the village were concerned. And something happens. He's never found. He just totally disappears and becomes the basis for the legend, The Outside Man. And a sentence describes what happened to him, and it's, "The ground drops from beneath his feet," that one sentence. And then you go and you jump forward to 416 years later. That's when the story really begins. What was it that stimulated this thought process of taking that big of a time jump? In your book, it's like traveling with a time machine. What made you choose that direction?
I wanted to write a story about the dynamics of adopted children in a family, and that just seemed a good way to go, taking an adult who came from that kind of a situation and putting it back into that environment that I loved. I love prehistory, and living in that remote, isolated place, prehistory was just 10 steps from my door, and it just seemed natural. And all those natural things were there: the waterfalls and the glory holes, the big caves, and I remember one time on horseback, and it was just right at dusk. And we were looking for cattle, and we rode past a pile of rocks, and I asked my husband what that was, and he said, "Well, that's a burial cave. That's where an Aleut is buried." And those things just stuck in my mind, and I wanted to write about them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And as you said, your very environment gave the trigger pull to your firing off into a world of a story that just, it's a love story, but it's one that weaves in. You're very good at doing this. You weave in all of these points of reality that are a part of the very environment that you live in. And it's fascinating how stories will come to life like that. It's almost as if you have to be quiet enough to listen to the whispers of those that have been to be able to tell their story. When you found out about this legend, The Outside Man, and you were putting your characters together, like Mel, the woman in the story, Adam, who is the man who is going to become the love of her life, and all of the things in between, did you have to sequester yourself away? Did you find a rock that you went outside and sat on and wrote? Did you just sit in a room? How did these characters come alive for you?
Mostly when I write, especially when I wrote this story, there was a man in 1925 who died out there at the ranch. And for a long time, in fact, he just sort of got lost in history. And I know the story that came down to me was that he had never been found, and he was just always there. And that was sort of the basis for part of the characterization of the of Amos, the man that they found in the cave. And when I would walk, and I did a lot of walking, I walked behind sheep, and I rode horseback days and days and hours and hours. And that story just kind of filtered into my head. And then whenever I had an odd minute, I would write it down. It was that story was a long time coming. I probably worked on that story for 15 years.
Oh,
when
my
I was
goodness.
Out there.
15
there were
years.
Real people.
Right. So, and that's the feel that I received when I was going through the book. These people, you were sharing their stories. Though they were wearing perhaps a little bit of a different costume in the story that you put together. It is a story that's very, very powerful in its message. You talk about the ravens in the book, how they are very sacred birds in Alaskan legends. What is, with the raven, they are a very, very special bird, and they're huge. They are absolutely huge. What is one legend about the ravens that especially was significant to you?
Oh, just their wiseness. I'm trying to. I think you kind of. I got me at a loss for a raven legend all of a sudden. The ravens were their wings were like cloak like, mm-hmm. and they were in some of the other Alaskan cultures more prominent than they are in Aleutian legends, but yes, they are a cloaking entity.
And they're also known for being extremely intelligent and very mischievous. They express themselves in amazing ways. Then you also bring out something called the glory hole. What is a glory hole?
A glory hole is a big hole in the ground that's very much concealed along the cliff edges, the way the rock formations are. And it's sort of like a lava tube that goes down into the water, down and fills up with water in the when the tide changes. And they can be very, very deep, lots of feet deep, hundreds of feet deep. And if you drop the one story I remember is of dropping a rifle and having it wash up, dropping a rifle from the top of the cliff, having something fall into a glory hole. Thank goodness none of us ever fell in one. But they were just a concealed kind of a tube going mm-hmm. down from the earth. Mm-hmm. They were frightening.
Your book, and I know we're just about out of time, your book, Outside Man, if you love the substance of legends and myths, Cora Holmes has a magical way of weaving them into a story that if you're a romantic, you will enjoy it. If you are a person that loves the stories of people overcoming seemingly insurmountable odds, mystery, how do you clear up confusion? All of this is going to serve you very, very well because The Outside Man definitely will take it there. And Cora, what's your website so people can find out more about you and your other writings? Because you're a busy gal with that.
Yes, my website is simply coraholmes.com.
Mm-hmm.
All lowercase, easy to find.
Wonderful. coraholmes.com. And Cora, of course, is spelled with a C, C-O-R-A. It has been a delight having you as a guest. I wish you continued success, and when you come out with your next book, you have to send me one.
Oh, thank you, Donna. I sure will.
It's been a pleasure. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment. Don't go away.
As a counselor, Donna Sebo is available for private consultations by appointment. These can be done by telephone or in person. If you'd like to schedule an appointment with Donna, call 253-582-5604 or 800-872-8852. That's 253-582-5604.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Hi, this is Donna. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. Well, my goodness, next week we have got a fascinating array of guests, and I want you to know about it. We're going to be going science fiction. That's right. Right off the bat, next week we're going to be talking with Robert Harkin about life on Anubis. We're going to be taking the time machine forward a few hundred years, as Robert likes to portray it, maybe even taking us to another planet. So this should be fun. Also, I'm living to tell. Lori Beck is a woman that has written her story about how she survived a terminal illness, and she's living to tell it. And so we'll be talking with her on Tuesday. West Coast kid Travis is going to be our guest. Travis is a man that has walked a walk in life none of us would want to do if we were in our right mind. He did it. He tells about it. And it gives you an eye-opening reality to a side of life that many of us, if by the grace of whatever, we don't have to experience it. We don't want to. And how he turned things around and now is living a different life. But he says, I have to get the story out. Also, the courage to be profitable. Oh, my goodness. Who doesn't want to make money? Well, Ruth King, we're going to be talking about the courage to be profitable. You think it's easy to run a business? Well, she's going to show you how you can do it and do it well. Coming out ahead, advice is for winners. Raul Perez is going to be my guest a week from today, and I know you're a winner. So let's check out what it is that he wants to share with you so that you keep that winning streak going. Also, for those of you here in the Pacific Northwest, know that Emerald Spiral Expo is happening tomorrow. I'm going to be there along with a lot of wonderful people. Our products and services are going to be made available to you. Stop by my table. I have a booth there, and I'll be doing many consultations, and I'm going to have an abundance of books that you can peruse through. And just know that it's from 9 to 5. It's held at Kent Commons. It's in Kent, Washington. Check out the website, emeraldspiral.com, and you'll find out all the details about parking, etc. It's free public admission. You are going to have a chance, if you've always wanted to talk to someone that does masseuse work or anything else, this is the event to come to. People are warm, friendly, and they love to share their knowledge and wisdom with you. So do come and join us. That's the Emerald Spiral tomorrow, 9 to 5 in Kent, Washington. Are you a fidgeter? Do you get a little antsy? Do you doodle? Do you put your fingers in your hair, twist it about? Do you tap your fingers or your feet? Shift in your chair? Twirl with a pen, paper clip? Do you have any of these habits? Well, as you know, there are studies upon studies upon studies, and there is one that was done recently. And I know most teachers in the world would just say, I don't want fidgety kids in my class. Of course, that's impossible. Kids are always going to fidget. However, what does it mean? What does it mean if you're a doodler? Well, in the study, they found out when people doodled, drawing pictures, could be bunny rabbits' faces, It can be doing loop-de-loops, whatever it is. You're actually artistic. And doodling, believe it or not, is something that enables you to focus. It is a way people relieve sometimes creative, artistic tension. It's a way of dealing with stress. Sometimes they're bored, or they may be working on a project, and by doing the doodling, it allows the creative processes within you to operate. So if you are a doodler, what they found in research, it actually causes your brain to be more effective with problem solving. And you may be able to doodle your way right into an answer. Now, how many mothers go after their daughters who will go and put their fingers in their hair and they twist their hair around their finger? I've seen, rarely, but I've seen it, men will do it. But women typically do it because their hair so often is longer. Well, it's an indication of boredom, usually, or nervousness. Now, it's not a good thing to do. It doesn't really impress people very much. But what they found at the University of California at Berkeley, when people are doing this, it means they're thinking. They're not being present with where they are. You are thinking about other things. It's a distraction. And that is why so frequently in various classes, a teacher will say, don't do that. Don't do that. Or a mom or a dad or a member of family, when they find someone doing this, they go, what's the matter with you? Stop playing with your hair. Well, if you are wise, you'll realize that that person is in a thought processing patterning. You might want to bring them present so that they'll be mindful about their environment, because that is important. But it's an interesting habit, and that is what they find. They find that people are thinking about the future, maybe some complex issues that are concerning them, and that is why they have that habit. Now, people that have a tendency to tap their fingers or their feet, usually they're people that want to get things going. They want to move. They want to be out there doing. They don't want to just sit and talk. They want to do something that's going to make a difference. It's called cognitive restlessness. And when they're doing this, they're thinking. Their thinking process, many times, is going to be faster than that of people around them. And it also, many times, is an indication that, especially if it's a younger person, that they have a capacity for leadership. So it is irritating when people are, you know, brum, 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 with their fingers. That is very irritating. Maybe you can communicate with that person, tell them that is irritating, but what's on their mind? What is it they're thinking about? What is it that they feel that they need to do to make a difference in their life? It's not just being bored. Also, if you shift in your chair, if you are someone that has, just like I said at the beginning, teachers hate it when kids are constantly squirming. Well, it means that they want to be active. They've got a lot of energy when they're little. They want to put that energy out. Well, if you have an adult that's doing that constantly, then maybe they need to know a more active role of some type that they can put themselves into so that they can be more effective. You know, a lot of businesses today are telling people, if you want to problem solve, great. You're going to do your work standing up. And you know what? It's made a difference. They will do work standing up. I've heard of people conducting meetings. They don't have anybody sit down. They have them all standing. They say, you're going to stand. They even provide tables where you're standing. Why? Because for some reason, it enables you to think more effectively and efficiently, and that otherwise fidgeting environment, well, it's not going to be there, because you're not going to waste your time. When you're standing, you have to pay attention to what's going on. And the last one, twirling pins, paper clips, something else. Well, one, it shows you have very good motor skills. Again, that is a very positive thing. You're also usually detail-oriented and conscientious. Well, I just wanted to share those little tips with you for those of you that are celebrating the holiday of Easter, whether it's just an Easter egg hunt or you are worshiping at your special place. It doesn't make any difference. This is going to be an awesome weekend. Spring is here wherever you are. Enjoy yourself. Remember always you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. You have choice. Enjoy the beauty of what's around you and be excited about the opportunities that are before you because they are there. And don't forget, if you need help, ask for it. This is Donna. So glad you were able to join me. Won't you tell your friends and join me on Monday? I'd love to have you come back. We're going to be traveling into the future. It should be a fun journey. Donna Sebo here. Have a fabulous weekend. God bless. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.